right with everybody. We'll start with approval of the minutes. Do we have any changes for the minutes from the last meeting? Need somebody to approve them then in a second? Have approval? Do we have a second? Have a second. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
So approved.
That's that one abstention.
Oh, one abstention. Okay.
I wasn't here, so.
All right. And the first order of business is COVID. And who's going to handle that for us, Joe?
And it's a little broader than COVID.
Okay.
Yeah, the main goal here is to talk about recreational reporting, but I saw that you had sent out the spreadsheet with some of Rob's calculations, so I'll just try to bring that home a little bit. You know, it's pretty tough to look at that out of context and see what the heck's going on. So, you know, a lot of the MRIP stuff, especially at this stage of the game, MRIP estimates for 2016 are going to be highly speculative. You know, there's nothing that we as an agency will be able to do that we're not already doing either here at the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council level. But I just wanted to give people an update of where we are and what it might look like by the end of the year. So the Atlantic Migratory Group, which is Georgia through New York, we have MRIP preliminary harvest estimates up through June. So about 6 weeks after the two-month wave ends, MRIP releases preliminary estimates. And from Georgia through New York, we're estimated at about 443,000 pounds. And if you remember from the last time we were going through the cobia management issues, the recreational annual catch limit, or ACL, is 620,000 pounds. It was 630 last year, but there's been a step down that's been planned since the last stock assessment. And the accountability measures, which dictated what we did in the event of an overage, those were only triggered if we exceeded the total ACL, which is commercial and recreational. And that this year, that number is 670,000 pounds. So basically, we have a little bit over 200,000 pounds before we exceed that. And that's not including July and August for any of the states, which for Virginia, that's usually our biggest two-month wave of harvest. And for North Carolina, they can still get a lot of fish, too, depending on whether or not the fish stay. So there's a pretty good chance that we exceed that number, at least judging by how the MRIP estimates have looked so far. We've had a lot of citations. We've had decent number of carcass donations to suggest that we're still catching a lot of fish. But I think there is reason to be at least comforted that it's not going to be like 2015. This little table here has Virginia and North Carolina's May-June estimates from last year and this year. The reason I show it like this is to just show you comparisons of what MRIP is reporting in terms of harvest. So in 2015, Virginia was reported to have 270,000 pounds in May and June. This year, that number was only 167,000 pounds. And North Carolina, you can see that the discrepancy is even bigger. Last year, they were estimated at 650,000 pounds of harvest in May and June. This year, it's down to 200,000. So whether that's the nature of the MRIP estimates or whether or not that means North Carolina and Virginia's regulation changes actually led to reductions, I'm sure it's a little bit of both. I think the point is that we probably aren't going to see as big of an overage as we did last year. I'd have a hard time believing that, you know, we'd get another million pounds from July and August on. And I think that combined with the fact that the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council is changing their accountability measures that will take place in 2017, that will give us a little bit more leeway in how we would handle an overage. So last week they voted on changes that would basically be changes to federal waters regulations and then changes to the accountability measures, which would determine when a closure happens or what we do if we go over that annual catch limit. So the only thing that's left is for the Secretary of Commerce to actually approve on these, but that's what the South Atlantic Fishery Council voted through. And basically, in years past, if we went over, they close the season. They figure out, based on that harvest and previous years, they would say, when will we be projected to reach this ACL? This year, well, from 2017 onward, the goal is to first reduce the vessel limit. So they could go as low as two fish per vessel in an attempt to get a reduction without having to shorten the season. If the overage was so big that reducing the vessel limit wouldn't get the job done in Noah's eyes, then they would shorten the season. But I think, like I said, the fact that the overage, there's a good chance it'll be smaller. When you combine that with having more tools at your disposal, I don't think it will be as dramatic as what we went through this past year. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to field them. That was all I was going to touch upon in terms of landings. The rest of my presentation deals with our reporting system for recreational cobia and other species.
That's good. Any questions, anybody? Great. Thank you.
Like I said, South Atlantic is definitely doing all they can to make sure that we have a little bit smoother sailing in the future. So we'll obviously be keeping our eye on this and on commercial harvest to see where it all shakes out by the end of the year.
I think it's safe to say that the public effort put in by the Virginia and North Carolina people really made a difference.
I would agree with that. You certainly saw, not only in the way that they voted at the state level, but just the public input process on the South Atlantic, on the federal level, has definitely seen a lot of representation from our anglers, and I can tell that they're doing their best to include everyone. So,
when do you expect the July-August figures for Virginia to be available?
It's usually about 6 weeks after that wave ends, so mid-October is when we would expect to see those numbers. And really, Virginia can have some September-October harvest. North Carolina can have a little bit more, but it's never a big number. Maybe it's 5,000 pounds, 10,000 pounds. So compared to the scale, 700,000 pounds, it'll be relatively small. So we'll know the general nature of the harvest come mid-October, whether we're over by a little, whether we're under by a little.
I hope it'll be shared with the committee at that time.
Yeah, we could certainly send something out, because as soon as it happens, we'll get an email, it'll be online, and we'll look it up. And like I said, it'll be preliminary at that point. It won't be the entire year, but it'll be pretty close. We'll know whether it's a million or 600,000, 800,000, kind of a ballpark.
I don't fish for cobias, and I kind of dropped watching this after the commission made its ruling, but did the commission close the season in Virginia? Did they put an end date on it?
August 30th was the last
August.
Day.
But you keep talking about landings in October and September.
Well, I just meant generally speaking, but North Carolina will stay open until October 1st, I think.
But there shouldn't be any landings in Virginia.
Virginia should not have any landings.
Okay.
You're right.
I
wasn't even thinking about that.
All right. Thank you. No legal landings in
Virginia. Yeah. Well, we've had some undersized cobia in the Emirate numbers, so who knows. Any other questions?
I have a comment on that. There still is a commercial season, and if the commercial season goes over a lot, it could affect that number because it's a combination of commercial and recreational. And last year, they thought that the commercials only had 53,000 pounds, but just recently in the last month and a half, they realized they had an extra 30,000 pounds or so. So Virginia could contribute to more fish being landed in September and later.
So on, Jeff.
Sir, thank you.
On that note, when we changed the cobia regulations to one fish per angler, whenever that was, because I was in the middle of that fray, we were assured by staff and the commission, and some of the commissioners at the time at least, that they would watch the commercial fishery to ensure that it did not grow substantially. Mm-hmm. At that time, I believe that landings in the commercial fishery were less than 20,000 pounds. And now we're up to 80,000 pounds.
No, that's for the whole coast.
For the whole coast, okay, that's not just Virginia, okay.
We're still around 20,000.
We're still around 20? Thank you. That's what I was worried about.
Okay.
I've got I've got two hook and line boats, and I've only had two for the past 3 or 4 years, so we haven't seen a lot more boats jump into it. And after the last, the tropical storm we had, it pretty much cut off any commercial bite. So we're not producing from where I'm at.
Very good. Thank you.
So we have been, you know, between having odds and ends, different comments come in from anglers and just talks we've had among staff. It seems to be there's a interest in streamlining some of our recreational fisheries reporting systems. So Saltwater Journal is VMRC's online reporting platform where recreational anglers can submit their catch, you know, trip information, things like that. And we have a few fisheries where recreational reporting is required, in a sense similar to how commercial does it. These are for very popular fisheries that either have a lot of participants or, you know, it's not as abundant of a fish up in the bay or off the coast of Virginia. And so there's been an interest in trying to keep a better track of it. Those fisheries where we mandate or are beginning to mandate recreational harvest reporting is tilefish grouper complex, trophy striped bass in the spring. We have a separate season. And then cobia, which was voluntary in 2016, but the goal is to make it mandatory in 2017. So these are the three fisheries that I'll be talking about, what sort of reporting requirements we have in place for them now, and kind of general summary of how's the participation in these. It's mandatory, but is everyone still reporting or not? So I'll just start off with tilefish grouper. That one's been around for a number of years now. This table basically shows the number of people who signed up for the permit in 2016. The second column is the number of people who have reported that said, oh, I went and took a trip on July 16th, or they just said, I didn't have any activity this year. And then that last column is just the percentage of that, so the number of people who are actually utilizing these programs. So the general way that these systems work is you get a permit. If you're caught fishing without a permit, you're in trouble. So you get this permit that's no cost, just an add-on to your license. In order to be eligible for that permit in subsequent years, you have to have some sort of reports. Either these are the trips I took, or if you didn't go, you say, I didn't go fishing for tilefish grouper. So that's how you maintain your eligibility year after year, and that system is meant to ensure compliance or participation. As you can see, the numbers are actually very low in terms of how many people sign up and then how many people contact us with either their harvest activity or I didn't go fishing. Broken up into private recreational charter, but both are 7 or 8%. So that's obviously pretty low, and we don't know if the people that aren't responding, maybe those people don't go fishing and all they have to do is call in and say, I didn't go fishing, or it could just be people who go out fishing and then just don't report. And, you know, we've yet to drag anybody before the commission to do anything about it. So,
Brian, those aren't people reports, those are vessels.
Vessel, yeah.
They might have different crew members fishing with them. So they could, you know, on one vessel over the course of the year, they might have different people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the captain of the vessel reports for all that happens on his boat. So, do you want
to? While we're in this part of it, go ahead.
Illegal, but most of the other charter captains don't seem to bother with the federal permits. So I'm wondering the state permit with the federal department for trout.
We never have, and you know, to be honest, we have talked to the feds about the two licenses, especially early on when they came out. And I think if you go back to 2009, they did ask us for a list. They haven't asked since. It's something to look into.
And I was going to bring that, the local rep for Marco talking to the day, and he asked, which boats have you seen out fishing in federal water don't have a permit? And I said, look, I'm not about that. I'm not going to rat other charter guys down. I mean, you can crosswalk the list with DMRC yourself if you have mind to.
Would it not make more sense for Virginia to turn their permits over to the feds rather than worrying about who's going to go which way?
Well, there's certainly something to it, Mr. Chair. And the whole point of this is for some open dialogue, so I do.
Okay.
And we certainly don't have to take up a lot of time on this. But, each of these three mandatory reporting requirements are going to be exceptionally different. They came about in completely different times under completely different circumstances. You know, so the striped bass permit that's been trophy permit that's been around forever was a request and hope to get more data back in the day when you know we had a hard time believing MRIP numbers. Okay, so maybe there's going to be a theme here, but still certainly under different circumstances. Cobia was something that was talked about and pushed for last year, and tile fishing grouper was a very different circumstance where if you remember, we were trying to be very proactive because we were concerned that the Mid-Atlantic was going to get cut out of the tack that was being set for the South Atlantic fishery. You know, maybe it is time to start thinking about Mike's concerns with if this is a fishery that's solely prosecuted in federal waters and these guys have federal permits, you know, do we necessarily need to have basically double reporting for a species that occurs in federal waters?
I guess the question would be, are they reporting their catch in the federal permits?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the early I mentioned discussions early on with them. They have a lot of the same issues, especially how many times are they going out and counted as a for hire trip, and then being required to fill in those.
Since we're at the ground stage of this, well, not really at the ground stage, but as far as starting to look at it again. Maybe we should parallel for a couple of years and see who's getting the right information and maybe cut it out on one level or the other, or at our level, I guess, in the future. Yes?
We have to report everything double. When I'm spotted dog fishing, I have to report it to the federal and I have to report it to the state. And the federal permits I have, if I catch a Spanish mackerel and I'm in Queen's Sound, not even in the ocean, I have to fill out a federal report, not just in federal waters. But if I have a federal permit, anywhere I catch a species, I have to fill out the report. So we have to fill out double ones constantly. If I use that boat, now, you know, I don't have a permit on my little boat. I have it on the bigger boat. Anywhere I go with that, I have to fill out a federal one. Right. So it's the same issue.
Jeff?
Sir, yes.
As a buyer, we report to the state on spiny dogs, and we report to the feds on a weekly basis both. So what Ernie said, we all double report everything.
Tom.
Change the subject a little bit. Back to the big disparity between the number of permittees and the number who are required to report but don't. This is a relatively small number. We're not talking 10,000. Would it be possible for staff to send out a letter with a return card that says, you haven't reported, you're not going to get your permit next year if you don't report, we're going to make it easy. Here's a card, fill it out, send it back.
Yeah, we do. I mean, you know, most of the folks sign up online and we have email addresses and they, you know, if some of you may have experienced that, so they do. And, you know, we did that with striped bass last year and again this year for the trophy season. So they get automatic email address.
The real value on this is for species like tilefish, grouper, cobia. MRF data to me, and I've looked into it real extensively, is really bad because it's such a sparse intercept at the dock, and then the dockside intercepts oftentimes are skewed by location, and then they're spread out all over the state.
Well, if you look at the lower half of this, Ryan has the tilefish landings for the last. I'm joking, but that it really is the tilefish landings. There have been no tilefish landings in Virginia for several years. So
that goes the other way, where it's like we're completely underreporting then, based on MRIP.
You could do like you do on the commercial side, bring them in front of the commission, take all their license away for not reporting. I've seen
well,
it happen
I mean,
numerous
if,
times.
If the intent is really for these to be mandatory, then yeah, there has to be consequences.
I think the first step is just you start a running list, and how long are they not allowed to get a permit for that vessel? And if the vessel changes hands, can they still get a permit on that vessel? I mean,
yeah.
Those are the questions.
You
can't get one the next year, but
about.
2 years later you can. Then it may be a sufficient thing just to start with to say, you didn't report, you're not getting a permit next year. And if we have to change your regulation so it's 3 or 4 years to make it effective, then that's an approach.
I think as we get into more general stuff, it might just help to go through the rest of the presentation and then whatever questions remain.
Sounds good.
There's definitely been a lot of new comments presented, but I think some of the stuff might get covered.
Okay.
And I think kind of going back to what, something Mike had said, just having to report the same fish twice, I think there are probably multiple reasons why people may not be participating. And I think with tilefish and grouper specifically, this is what's listed in our regulation as everything that they have to report. Now, when you put this all on a piece of paper, format it nicely, it's not a terrible pain. But if you look at this list, there's a lot of things city or county have landed, gear type and amount used, number of hours fished. There's a lot of different pieces of information that, depending on what our goal is for using this data, may not be necessary to collect some of these things. You'll notice at the top there that tilefish grouper requires monthly reporting, which is completely analogous to how commercial reporting is, whereas you'll see later on with striped bass and cobia, we've set it as a end-of-the-season reporting thing. So one of the main themes here is that we have three fisheries, but the reporting systems are quite different, and one of our goals in coming here and eventually bringing it before the commission is to figure out, is there a way that we can get it as similar as possible across all these fisheries and sort of get out the pieces of information that we may not ever use, even if it might be nice to know. If we're not going to use them, is it really worth making people spend the extra time to report it? So this is a very long list of reporting requirements, the longest of the three, but I think it still will make the point with striped bass and cobia. So this is the same type of table as before, except for the spring trophy striped bass season. There were 1,645 private permittees, and about half of them either reported no activity or they reported some amount of harvest. So charter boat was much lower. And one of the things that could be at work here is when the spring rolls around, you say, you know what? I want to be eligible next year. I might go fishing this year. I'm going to get the permit. And then it's a pretty short season. Suddenly it's June 15th or whatever it is. And they say, I didn't even go. So we do, it's about 550 of that 869 are people who reported no activity. Could also be people who went fishing a couple times, forgot to report, and by the end of the season they just said, I don't remember what I caught. I'll just say no activity. So the unfortunate thing is we have no easy or accurate way of figuring out how many people are honestly reporting no activity, how many people just forgot. And like I said, of that 47% that didn't give us anything, what is their fishing practices? Are they not fishing at all, or are they just not reporting? So same thing. This is the striped bass reporting regulation. The first thing you'll note is at the top, reporting is just required one time. 15th day after the season closes, you have to have everything in, but, you know, we're not going to hound you. It's a pretty pretty short season. It's not like tilefish grouper, which is over the entire year and would be ludicrous to expect people to just remember what happened over the course of an entire year. But still, these are the things that are required, and we're certainly open to discussion about, is there anything that isn't in there that we should add, or is there anything in there that we should take out? You know, length of fish, something that could be useful, but, you know, is it accurate data? You know, is it well measured? Is everyone providing it? What happens if you catch a bunch and just say they are all about 41 inches? Something like that. We've had that with tilefish groupers. So it's a really important question to ask. How much utility would it provide us, and can we trust it? Cobia is the last fishery that we have recreational reporting for. It was actually voluntary this year. We wanted to kind of pilot it, see what we can change before making it mandatory, because we know from striped bass and tilefish grouper that we don't have good reporting rates. We don't have good participation. So the idea is to give people an opportunity to try out the system. And we just completed putting together a survey that will hopefully help gauge people's opinions on the Saltwater Journal program, on their cobia fishing activity, and we hope that their responses will give us feedback to say, I didn't like this, I didn't like your water body question, you know, and that way we'll have an idea of what the anglers want, so that when we turn around and make it mandatory, we're presumably giving them the most convenient product that we can make. You know, if mandatory reporting is here to stay, we're going to at least try and work with the anglers to see what is something that at least the majority of people can agree on. So we're sending that out to everyone who signed up for a permit, and then we're going to send it out to, you know, a small subsample of general license anglers. So as I said, it was all voluntary this year, so there are actually no regulations. We had reasonable, you know, participation for something that was completely voluntary this year. We had 443 people sign up between the private boat and the shore pier permit for cobia. 30 out of those 38 were people who reported some harvest, and then there were 8 people who said, I didn't go cobia fishing. Charter was 4 out of 18 people had reported at least one trip. So it's still very low, and our goal is that when we send out this survey and hopefully get some responses, we'll be able to tweak the Saltwater Journal program either just for cobia or for striped bass, tilefish, and all the other species based on what these people say. So the percentages in those tables obviously show you that compliance is very low, and the question we have been asking is, how can we increase compliance? Is it better communication with the feds? Is it streamlining so that there aren't as many things to require reporting? But one of the biggest points is that with commercial fisheries, we have buyer reporting to some degree, which can help us compare to our harvest reports that will say, oh, this person didn't report this. We have, you know, so-and-so fish house. So that's not as clear cut in recreational fisheries, because you take it home, you eat it, or you release it, whatever. There's no way to get that second layer for comparison. And the other issue, which I've already referred to, is that we can't be sure that an angler is reporting all of his or her trips. So even the people who we have reports for, legally, they're going to be able to get their permit every year after that, as long as they report one trip. But maybe they're taking 10 trips and only reporting one of them, and that's going to compromise the quality of the data. So unfortunately, at this point in time, we don't have an effective way of doing that, let alone for 3 fisheries, one of which has presumably over 1,500 participants. So these things all make compliance probably a little bit more difficult in recreational fisheries than commercial, where you have a system that's been in place much longer, and you have that second layer on the buyer end of, can we confirm that what we see is what's actually going on? So even if we could figure out how to solve all these problems, there's always going to be questions about fisheries data. Obviously, MRIP, which is designed to be totally unbiased, has its shortcomings, and these programs are no different. They just have different kinds of pitfalls that you have to worry about. This may seem silly, but just, can people accurately measure a fish? a lot of people will look at a fish and say, oh, yeah, I know that that's a 40-inch cobia, and they may not measure it, but if you look at what Emirate does, they're measuring down to the millimeter, which is really, really small. And when you're trying to track, has the average size of a fish changed over time to the point where we need to be worried about the population, if you have a bunch of small errors, they can add up to the point where we're being misled by this data. So it's always a question mark that when people report, is it totally accurate? You know, not trying to insult anyone's ability to use a ruler, but some people either just estimate it, the fish is flopping around, and you say, ah, close enough. Or the problem that we've had with some people with tile fishing grouper, you say, oh, I caught 10 fish, and here's the average length. Or, you know, I measured some but estimated the rest. So there's a lot of leeway in that data that we get. This second point, are there enough people reporting? We can see from those tables that there aren't enough people reporting at this time. And then the third point, which is a little bit less obvious, is getting all the different types of anglers. So we know that in recreational fisheries, there's different types of anglers. There's people who only care about catch and release. There's people who only want to go catch a cobia so they can eat it. And there are people who can go out there and be almost certain that they're going to get something, or there could just be the family. Guy takes his kids out, drops a couple lines in the water, but is more concerned with just being safe, having fun, and maybe they aren't going to catch as many fish. But if you have only the most avid, the most talented anglers reporting, you say, okay, well, we have 100 people who reported that they caught this many cobia. We had 300 people who didn't report. Let's just assume they're like the people who did report. Then, once again, you're going to be misled by the data because you're going to think that we're catching more than we are. And then, are we all that different from what MRIP's providing? So, you know, there's difference in terms of number of trips an angler takes, how successful he or she will be when they're out on the water, and all those different factors can really create some biases in the data if we're not careful about this stuff. I think kind of wrapping this up, what I said at the beginning is we're trying to make this easier. We're trying to make it streamlined. If possible, make it similar across all three of these, tilefish grouper, striped bass, cobia. There's a lot of people, or at least I've seen, there's a number of people who are involved in more than one of these fisheries. So for those people who have to navigate through these three different reporting systems, if we could have one form or one set of requirements that's similar between all three, it might make people more inclined to report because it'll just be less of a hassle. The other thing that, you know, should we be modeling commercial and recreational reporting the same way? Obviously, the goal is maintaining a healthy stock, but that may look different from commercial or recreational, especially with sport fisheries where a lot of times people just want to catch and release, which obviously is not a very wise business strategy if you're a commercial waterman. So the complexity of reports, like I said, if we don't need all these pieces of information, maybe the size of the reporting form or the number of things we're reporting are deterring people from participating in these fisheries. And I think the main goal is to try and get that number from 8% a little bit higher so that we're not trying to punish hundreds of people at the same time. As much as those people are all breaking a law that we have set, it's very hard from a practical standpoint to try and enforce. If 800 people didn't report their striped bass activity, what do you do to punish all those people? You know, tough for law enforcement, tough for staff. So, you know, I think the goal here is to see if we can do this the right way up front to get that percentage higher so that when we try to come after people and punish them, it's not the people who are just, you know, maybe a little lazy or confused as to how it works. It's the people who are, you know, knowingly breaking our regulations. So one thing that might help, I've heard from a number of people, is offering a mobile electronic reporting option, whether it's iPhone or, you know, any kind of smartphone, so that you can just log in. You don't have to worry about the username, password, because if it's on your phone, you can just go right to your own web page. The big problem is people have trouble with the Saltwater Journal website. Either forget their password or the system's down for one reason or another. So that would be a way that could potentially make it easier and make people less inclined to just forget about it. So Another benefit, data is preserved on a database. If you have a paper and you lose it, drop it in the water, just lose it in your house, it's gone. If you enter a trip and you lose your phone, we have the data. There's no problems. You don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, I did it, but I couldn't get it to you. And from a more, I guess, user end perspective, from the angler's perspective, it's easier for you to look up information if you always have it. If you're interested in sharing fishing spots or tips or whatever with people that you sometimes go out with, it's a lot easier. I think having access to what's worked in the past for you is something that could actually make it a little bit more interesting to use, because at the end of the day, none of these programs are going to work if nobody wants to do it. So, you know, from a marketing standpoint, I hate to use that word, but we want to make something that anglers actually enjoy having for one reason or another, whether it's to look at a map of where they caught all their fish, or whether that's just being able to look at all their reports and say, what did I catch on that day, you know, or what was the weather? So those are the types of things that are that might also help get that reporting percentage up. So I'm just going to leave this up here in case it helps with some of the discussion. You know, some of the things that I'm not trying to advocate either way, but potential pieces of data that may just be something we could cut out in the future. When MRIP does their sampling, to them, a trip is a trip. They record the number of people that were on the boat, but when you get that MRIP estimate, it's going to say 30,000 trips, 10,000 trips. It's not going to be necessarily on the angler level. So, well, it's implied that it's angler trips. But if we're just looking at how many boats are out on the bay, or, you know, has this fishery grown in terms of, you know, total participation on the water, you know, do we really need to record the number of hours? You know, MRIP just says angler trip. So could we cut out the number of hours fished? requiring lengths and weights. If people are just going to estimate the length and not actually measure the fish, then that's not data that's going to help us. So unless we can know that people are interested in measuring the fish, then, you know, maybe we just make it optional so that the people who want to report will do it, the people who would rather not, or the people who are captain of a boat that are catching a ton of tile fish can't keep track of it all, instead of just saying they're all in the 15 to, you know, 20-inch range, whatever it might be. And then the last one I thought of throwing up here is the city or county of landing versus a water body fished. Those are two different pieces of, you know, geographic information. We might want to know the city or county of landing so that we know where some of these anglers live. But the water body fish lets us know physically where are they catching them. So do we need both? Do we need just one? These are the types of questions that we'll need to ask, because at the end of the day, what we want to get out of these determines what pieces of data we'll want to collect. And I just figured I'd throw this up there to show what other states have done with their sometimes it's volunteer, sometimes it's recreational mandatory, but just what other states have done in terms of volunteer angler reported data. Figuring out the lengths of fish that were released is a real pain in the butt, because MRIP can't get information on fish that were released at sea. The interviewers stand at the dock and measure stuff that was seen. So one thing that these programs have provided is information on fish that were released. So the state of Florida actually does its own stock assessments for certain fisheries that are mostly in state waters, and they have included volunteer-provided data on the length distribution of released fish. And as this becomes more popular, there will be studies that test whether or not these are reliable data. And as the ball gets rolling, we'll be more and more certain of what we're actually doing when we incorporate this data. The COBIA assessment that just happened a few years ago actually included South Carolina's logbook program. So I think since the mid-90s, all of their charter captains have been required to report their data, and that was actually used in the stock assessment to act as an index of abundance to see how has abundance of cobia changed over the years. And from a more ecological perspective in Florida, They've used this, the location of fishing points reported through an app to see which areas of the coast should be protected for fishing, for just endangered species, whatever it might be. So people who are willing to provide a rough, you know, maybe it's 1 kilometer by 1 kilometer, just area of where they caught this fish, it can show fisheries managers which areas are important. If we're going to do some sort of closure, which area should we keep open versus closed, things like that. So just wanted to throw some ideas up there. That's all I have. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll take any questions you have.
Let me. Do you know what the recreational participation rate is in the other states?
It's the two Florida ones come from a smartphone app that it's not required to report any of these things, and so there's no permit that would say how many red drum fishermen are there in Florida. So it's a problem down there, too, that they say, okay, we've had 400 different people report common snook catches, but they don't know how many snook fishermen there are.
Okay.
Obviously, the South Carolina, that one that says catch per unit effort, they know how many charter captains there are because that's all mandatory.
I'm thinking of just a standard recreational fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Tom.
So a few questions. First, my opinion.
Sure.
Why are we doing this? I think we're doing this so we can fundamentally debunk MRIP or whatever they're calling it now, data. So we can say the data they have, or prove that it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So we can say we think because we have, I would assume that we can somehow get 80% compliance in this, which is pretty good. We have 80% compliance in this, and I don't care how big they are because it's a big minimum, and we caught 2,000 cobia last year.
Mm-hmm.
MRIP says we caught 20,000 cobia last year. MRIP is wrong. We have this mandatory reporting system that we trust because we have officers who are writing tickets for people and who have cobia with no permit, and so we know what the compliance rate is for the officers who check boats that have cobia and no permit, and that have cobia and a permit. So that's it. So with that in mind, I think you should only be asking, how many trips did you do targeting the species? And how many fish did you catch on any trip that you caught the species? And you do it on a quarterly or annual basis. So you have 30 trips. And then on the trips that you caught fish, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, how many did you bring home in your vessel?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for all of these species, that's the approach you should be taking. For striped bass and cobia, too, tilefish maybe less because you really have to go work at targeting those. The last time I caught a trophy striped bass, I was fishing for fish that were, generally speaking, running 18 to 28 inches, and I happened to get lucky fishing around the islands and caught a big one. Well, I would have bought a permit when I was going out, or gotten a permit had I gone out that time of year fishing for striped bass. I didn't last year. But the point is, if I didn't have a permit, I'd release it because I didn't have a permit. But if I did have a permit and I decided to, and, you know, so there's a lot of people that won't have the permit. In theory, they'll release those fish because they don't have a permit. So the release number, you have to expand it by the number of people that don't have permits and release fish. So that's a bogus number to use anyway. So all I would want to do is say, do we trust MRIP? And MRIP says we can say how many fish people caught and killed, the A1 fish. Or is it A or A1?
A plus B1, yeah.
No, A plus B1. B1 is released dead. So you can't tell that because you're not asking them to report that. You're only asking them to report fish kept.
Yeah.
Well, I think that for this system, the only thing you should be asking is, how many fish did you keep of this species on any given trip, on each of the trips you're reporting on, that you caught fish? And that way, you reduce the burden on the fishermen to remember anything about size or do anything about measurement. You make it easier to report, and you give yourself enough data to deal with MRIP. Once you get the systems established, then we can start talking about creeping in a little bit more real data into the system based on what you need. MRIP for striped bass, I think, has excellent size distribution data. And I would say that for cobia, they probably do two. For the fish that they intercept, they know exactly how many they are. And assuming they intercept at least a few hundred fish during the year, they have a good estimate of the size distribution of what's kept. What they don't have is a good estimate of, or a good way to expand the catch per unit effort dockside interview data to the number of fish actually caught through effort. And if the state of Virginia can prove them wrong, it will help in us in establishing a better set of statistics. I have been grumpy about MRIP since 2003 when I took a serious look at it and realized all the flaws. Okay. My prime example, and I sent it out in an email, is speckled trout. For speckled trout in wave six, almost 90% of the intercepts in 2003 were from Rudy Inlet in December, in November and December. That's 10 guys fish Rudy Inlet, maybe 25. And they expanded that across the whole striped bass fishery.
Okay.
So I think I'm sure ultimately the goal is to have something that's on equal footing with MRIP so that we can make these comparisons and either debunk or confirm. But I think you still need to ask the more general question of what are the MRIP's numbers supposed to be doing? And I think the ultimate goal is assessing the stock. And so
MRIP is used to manage the fishery and the distribution of the fishery. That's what it's ending up being used for. And that's what you have recreational anglers upset about.
Yeah.
And I think we're after more than that. They're after stock size and fish size and a lot of other things
besides MRIP. MRIP does have valuable data. The dockside intercepted fish, the size distribution, and the probability distribution for size is very valid and very good data when they get several hundred fish in the statistics.
Well, I think as far as criticizing MRIP to any great degree at the moment, we should wait till after National Academy of Sciences gets through with it in December. I really do, because yeah, they're liable to tear it all to pieces.
MRIP thinks we have 850,000 fishermen.
I know, and that's a good place for them to start. And I've been working with them
We've got 250,000 maybe.
Now, any other questions on this? I personally prefer an app.
Yeah. And
I personally would prefer... I have a real problem with making recreational fishermen do more paperwork to go fishing than they have to do at work. And I think that's going to be a real big problem.
Yeah, and obviously this is all because we've reached a point where there are a lot more fishermen now than there were, you know, however many years ago. And it's just, it's tough to make it fair for everybody. And I think we... you know, are at a point where we can't really ignore for some of these fisheries where MRIP doesn't get good coverage of it. And, you know, in terms of what else do we need this data for, a lot of management ultimately hinges on what comes out of a stock assessment. We learn that with cobia, or is it overfishing, or is it overfished, or is it not? And so one of the main critiques that always comes out of a stock assessment is the size distribution. And so while there's certainly an argument for just getting as accurate data as possible on number of trips, number of fish, they're still going to be doing stock assessments the same way. They're still going to need size information. And so that's a trade-off that we have to consider is it worth trying to get people to report some lengths to improve the reliability we have in stock assessment estimates, or do we just want to keep it as bare bones as possible?
Can you go back to your number of permits page?
For which species?
Cobia. Well, you had them all in one place, but
yeah.
Cobia.
And
do we trust that there are no more than 443 vessels that fish for cobia?
No, because this is voluntary. We told them.
Okay.
We've had anglers come in and say, "Wow, I think there are that many people." So you know.
Oh, I think there's more than that. But mm-hmm. The point is.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I think you know you really need to have outreach, but you also really need to have consequences. Until you have consequences, you're just wasting your time.
I think the first consequence is losing your permit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I'll say might as well lay out the entire plan with this survey that we're sending out. The goal is to send it out in the next few weeks. get all the response. I mean, we're not going to get 100% response rate, but when we feel that we have everyone that's going to answer the survey has answered, we'll analyze the results, see what people are praising, complaining about, and start figuring out places that we can visit over the winter when things have slowed down a little bit to do some sort of an outreach campaign. Because I agree, it's people aren't going to want to do this if they don't even know about it, first of all. But if they know about it and don't understand why it's important, why spend the time? So
do we have dockside signs on the cobia permit?
No.
So why? I mean, Wallace's. If you put a dockside sign there, that, I mean, find your places where people are going out for these fish from, and put dockside signs up saying a permit is required to fish. Call 1-800. Get your permit here.
You know, that's so much more difficult for recreational than it is commercial, because you could go to spot stop, put a sign up, everybody comes there and sees it. You got so many recreational fishermen leaving from their own property.
But even still, if you put it up at the local boat, I mean, there are a limited number of access points that are really dominate the cobia intercepts. You could go to the MRIP raw data and figure out where they're getting all their intercepts and focus there and in areas near there.
And I trust
the raw data. Okay. I trust the size distributions and stuff that come out of it. I don't trust the expansion of that data to catch.
All right, let's do this in order. But
are you sending the survey to?
Every single permit holder. So we'll send out 443 or however many people it ends up being, and then we're going to do a subset of general saltwater license holders. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of permits, you know, saltwater fishing licenses. So we can't send it out to everyone, but maybe we'll get lucky and get a few more cobia anglers who didn't get the permit this year. So
let's do this in order, but one at a time. We could also put up the notices at tackle shops and bait shops, of course, since a lot of guys like to use fly bait for cobia.
Yeah, there's.
And would you include a short paragraph telling them why it's important now?
Yeah, so it'll have a cover letter that's hopefully not more than a half a page. It'd say why we're doing this.
The pressure.
And on the backside of that, optional, just say another few paragraphs that go more in depth, but.
Yeah, that we need more critical information now than we used to in the past. Let them know why we're looking for all this more information now, how critical it is.
Mr. Jeff, I mean, just one second.
Yes, please.
One of the reasons why cobia is voluntary this year, it was asked to be mandatory. One of the big holdups at the commission meeting, we got that far without ever talking about how we would administer a cobia permit. So going back to the comment that Lewis had, well, you know, the 443 verse, I'm not even sure which way to go with striped bass. Okay, so the 1600 for striped bass. There's one more important difference between these types of permits, and that striped bass is on every individual on a vessel. I would have told you, and I still want to say to this day, it would be easier to get compliance if you just made one person on that boat responsible for doing the reporting. But with striped bass, I mean, obviously you can see we've had a better – go ahead.
So I'm out with three of my buddies, and we catch one trophy fish.
Right.
One of my buddies has a permit. I happen to catch the fish. When the MPO comes up, what am I going to do, Dave? He caught it.
Yeah.
I mean.
No, as long as the captain of the vessel has a permit, then even if you as an angler don't have it, you'll be okay because the permit is attached to the vessel.
Right. So we made that decision in house for cobia. That's what we were telling people for this year. But I would like FMAC to weigh in. What might be the better way to go about this? Should a mandatory cobia permit be on every individual in the vessel, or does it make sense, as tilefish is to be a vessel permit, and that's the requirement? You know, we've already had people calling us with cobia saying, yeah, but I'd like to keep track of my stuff. How do I do that if I'm going out on somebody else's boat and I want to report my fish? We instantly started getting calls with all these different scenarios.
I think it should be the boat. My my brother-in-law takes, he goes cobia fishing. He's got my sister on the boat and their three kids. You're going to make all three kids get a permit, and the it should be the boat captain, because you need a boat to catch cobia, I assume,
no,
or kayak.
People do catch them on piers.
And we did that. We took care of. There's a kayaker can get their own permit. We created the pier permit because we know that Buck Row has success.
I think it's going to be simpler for the boat. I agree with Jeff. An app is the easiest way. Everybody's got smartphones nowadays. Keep it simple. There's got to be consequences, like Ernie said. And I think the reporting has to be a shorter time frame. You don't want to drag it out for. I mean, I've learned myself. If my wife says, Scott, before you go to work tomorrow, put the seat down in my Suburban, I go do it then. I'll forget by the next morning. So. You know, I think we need to shorten the time frame on reporting.
Could you write the software so that an individual who wanted to report it could report that he caught it on this boat
on
that day?
Yeah, I mean, I think.
But then you've got to have an identification number.
Well, we point, yeah, and a lot of them would if they were doing it for something else. So, I mean, we pointed out that we created that saltwater journal back in 2007 for folks that just wanted to do their own kind of little diaries of, and that still exists, and anyone could go in and use that. You know, there's a big difference between what we're requiring and what people are capable of doing. You can go in the Saltwater Journal and log all your fish, log every length, log what the weather was like, you know, and all that's useful information for us. But what we're requiring people to do and what kind of compliance we want to get with that probably depends on something a lot more bare bones, like Tom was talking about. But I do want you guys to at least, you know, give that some thought, because with Striped Bass Trophy, it wasn't written that way, but that was a long time ago that we started that.
So. What would it take to change the Striped Bass Trophy so it's a vessel instead of an individual?
Public hearing.
So I'd like to make a motion that this committee recommend that we go to a vessel permit for a vessel or individual. You could have an individual.
Because they fish off the beach.
Because people fish multiple ways, a vessel or individual permit, and the vessel permit covers anyone who's fishing on that vessel, and if you have a vessel permit, you have to mandatory report. You have to report it to catch on the vessel.
We're speaking cobia?
For striped bass. That's the one that has the... if cobia is a vessel, cobia is
no
vessel.
No one's decided on what cobia is.
I would recommend that all of these go vessel.
Okay.
I make that a motion.
Mr. Chair, should we see if there are just a bunch of recommendations that we could lump into one motion, or should we do it one at a time?
Well, we've got one.
I don't mind having it as a, if this is its own motion to get us started, I don't mind.
Yeah.
The other stuff seems to be a little more, I think it will be a little more complicated.
So what was the motion then?
The motion is that for tilefish already is a vessel permit. That for trophy striped bass and cobia, which are the other two that we're talking about, that it go to a vessel or individual permit, and so that we have provisions for people fishing on piers and people fishing in, well, kayaks.
So the vessel permit covers everybody on the vessel.
And the vessel permit covers everybody who's on the vessel, so when your brother takes, whoever he takes out,
right. They're
covered.
It parallels the tilefish permit.
Yeah. And that the vessel is, if it's a vessel permit, they're caught on that vessel, then they have to be covered by. And that doesn't stop somebody who has, if I go on your boat and you don't have a vessel permit, but I have a permit for an individual, I catch a trophy fish, I'm still legal when I get to the dock, and the reporting is on me.
Do we have a second for that?
Well, if Doug gets a second, it doesn't matter.
Well, I think that's the way it ought to be, so I'll second it.
Okay.
Any discussion?
Yeah, basically, that's the same thing as commercial. If I have two people work with me, you know, I can or cannot report them. It's up to me. I have to put down three people, but I don't have to put down who they actually were. So it's basically the same thing we do now. So,
yeah, and I'm not even sure that the form should ask how many people were fishing on your boat. Just you brought in four fish. Yeah, and that's a whole separate issue.
Well, it's like the boat permit I have for my skiff. Anybody or any of my both of my boats. Anybody that's with me is covered because I have a boat permit, and I think that's the way it ought to be.
We have the fishing licenses that way. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think to ask the person that came down from Ohio that got on a friend's boat
to get it. Yeah, that,
as opposed to having somebody responsible.
Oh, yeah, and then you're going to not issue them his permit next year or try to drag them before the commission.
And this motion makes reporting mandatory.
Well, that's already separate.
That's already in place.
For two, it already exists. For Cobia, we have to do it for 2017. So for all three.
Okay, so it's going to exist anyhow.
Yes, yeah,
okay.
I don't think Tom's motion needs to address that.
Can you read that motion back?
Exactly. Yeah, well, it's just, it would be in town unless you want to do it. I mean, it's would be for all three of these recreational, what will be mandatory, permits to have vessel reporting, or in the case of something like a fishing from.
No, it's either vessel or individual.
Here, I think I might be able to clear this up. So before I even start, Tom, I'll say this doesn't cover one of your scenarios, but for Cobia's voluntary system this year, how we have it set up is that there are three permits that you can get. Charter captain, private vessel recreational angling, or shore pier, so someone who's fishing somehow from land. Now, that would cover the idea of if you're on a vessel and the captain has a permit, everyone's allowed to catch cobia. It would cover the situation where if you're fishing from a pier, you're good. The issue that it doesn't address is what Tom brought up is, let's say I'm going on my friend's boat. My friend doesn't have a permit, but I still want to catch fish. I don't want to get in trouble because he doesn't have a vessel permit. And maybe there's some way around that if you could link up the captain of the vessel, and say, well, I was just fishing on the vessel. It's not mine. I don't want to get in trouble. And,
if they're held in common, the captain is responsible for
that. Yeah, and so maybe the captain would get punished. I don't know how it is, but
so then you have the argument on the water. If I caught this 36-inch striped bass and I want to keep it, but I don't have a permit, but I, But so if you're a serious striped bass fisherman or a serious cobia fisherman, you go ahead and get your own permit.
But if somebody has a permit on there, isn't the whole object of this to report the fish?
The whole object of this is to two things. Number one is to report the fish, and number two is to make it enforceable.
Right, and it's not going to be enforceable because you're going to be pointing at,
no matter how you do it, if you're on a vessel and you're holding the fish in common, the captain is responsible and can get the ticket.
Well, then,
if I have a permit, then I can say, no, that striped bass is my fish, and I have a permit for it.
Got it.
So that fish is covered. Or, for instance, if you're a serious cobia fisherman and you go out on Jeff's boat who's not, and you can say, I have a permit, so all the fish we catch on this boat today are under my permit, even though we're on Jeff's boat, and I will report them, that's fine, too.
But the individual one is a shore pier permit?
Well, right, I think what Tom is saying, there should just be across the board individual permit. So even if you're fishing from a boat and the captain doesn't have a permit,
right,
you don't want there to be any headaches if law enforcement comes. You can just say, I got it.
And that individual permit covers everybody on the vessel?
Well, that would be something that would have to be figured out.
I think that's not an unreasonable thing, but that individual permit is required to do the reporting.
Is responsible for it. That individual person wants to take responsibility for it.
Right. So that covers this concept of somebody who's got a boat and is not a cobia fisherman, and he has two buddies who want to go cobia fishing, and he just doesn't want to bother with the permit, and one of them says, I have a permit, so we're legal. I mean, that's the key is you make it so that it's enforceable and
simple.
Let me throw another scenario in there. If the one person on the boat has a permit, but the boat doesn't have a permit for cobia, and the limit is one per person, you have one cobia on the boat, period.
So that is, if there are optional ways to do it, that is one way to do it. There are multiple right ways.
Makes sense. The only guy on the boat with a permit is the one who gets to keep the cobia.
Makes sense.
No, nobody. You don't. Once you get to the dock, it's a fish.
No, but I mean, if you stop, there's one cobia permitted on that boat because only one person has a permit.
That's a fine way to do it.
If it's not a vessel.
If it's not the vessel permit, okay.
Yeah.
And the vessel permit covers the vessel and everyone on the vessel.
The vessel permit on cobia will allow you to keep up to six.
or whatever, whatever the boat limit is at the time. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah, I would think that the wording on the vessel permit would be just as we word what's held in common. So it would be whatever the vessel would be, max the vessel would be allowed.
Okay, any more discussion? Any more confusion? All right, all in favor, say aye, or say aye by raising your right hand. How many do we have? I can't see the last one. Now.
Nine? No. We have eight.
Hands up. Bernie just raised his. All opposed? Abstentions? One. Motion passes.
Can I offer a brief comment?
Yeah, no,
please.
I didn't mean to close all comments on the rest of this.
No, that's...
I wouldn't ignore the importance of some sort of perk or recognition for the reporters. I remember 20-some years ago, I lived in North Carolina, and I participated voluntarily in a quail survey. I was an avid quail hunter. And they gave the survey reporters not only a report at the end of the season that showed by county and so forth where the, you know, the quail were being reported, but they sent you a little gift. And it could have been a hat pin. It was something, but it said, you know, thanks. You're a voluntary participant. And it meant something, and I think it helped to get participation in the program.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. I guess the only danger is that, you know, do we plan on doing this forever? Is there a cutoff time? Because if this is a mandatory system that we plan on having around forever, 5 years down the road, are people still going to want to get the same gift? Are they going to desire to get a better gift or a different gift? So, you know, it's just something that we have to, are we only going to do it for a couple years as we try and get information out about this program?
As long as it takes to get everybody on board and forget about the gift.
Then will people drop off if we stop providing the gift? You know, it's...
I don't think so.
You know, the gift is the carrot, and after the carrot for a couple years and they drop off, it's the stick. I mean, that's what you got to do.
Change the gift.
Jeff.
Yes, Tom.
I believe state code would allow it. You could use recreational license money. You got to go before the RFAB and ask for it to actually have a substantial per fishery lottery type drawing for permit holders who report. Mm. And substantial is a few hundred bucks.
Yeah, give away a
new rod or something.
A new rod, a Yeti cooler, whatever, put everybody's name. It's a
Yeah.
A little one.
No, I'll just give my... If we didn't have people clamoring last year to say that this needs to be mandatory for this fishery, and we were just talking about voluntary data to help out this fishery, then I think it would be a whole different world on whether or not we should be doing this. Ernie's absolutely right. If we think we need better data and we have mandatory requirements, then, I mean, the commercial fishery has been doing this since 1993, you know, and all they see is the stick now, so I don't know. But it's certainly something that, you know, somebody could consider and bring up before the rec board if, yeah, it's good getting idea. To be a smaller and smaller pot of money, it seems like, but certainly a consideration.
Right. Did you need anything else from us? Did you want to consider?
Well, any other thoughts? Like I said, I didn't mean to cut this off on the value of
Okay. So we covered two things with that motion that are done, that are settled. We now have that. Yes, we want to have a vessel permit for all of them. We want to have individual permits, and if we do an individual permit, it is set by the limit for the individual on how many fish are allowed. What other changes to the system? Do we want to consider past that?
And quite frankly, Ryan and I are of the opinion that paddle fish grouper just isn't working. There's just too much required.
So you want to consider what to take out of the list, and then you want to compare it to the federal list.
Well, the federal list, I mean, for the four higher fleet, the vessel trip reports do have all of that information.
So I put on the table for discussion the concept that the only thing they should report is not fish caught. at least until we get the system established.
Our federal permit, we don't, there's no size and weight. You just put how many fish.
How do you feel about trips where you go out but do not catch that fish?
It's number of fish where you, so if I were wording the form, it would say number of trips where you targeted that species, and then number of, and any trips that you caught them, the number that you caught, and then just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, list 20 or some number
like
that.
So that number was zero, would VMRC know about it?
Yes.
Okay.
Zero, and then your, so your number of trips where you targeted the species, including zero.
Mm-hmm.
But then would if you have a federal permit, you have to report everything. So that's, this is where the charter boats get in trouble, because, like, I have a federal permit for sea bass, bluefish, all that. Well, when we go croaker fishing, there's no permit for croaker, but because I have a federal permit, I have to report croaker. So you're basically just reporting what you're catching, not what you're targeting. And there's no weight, because I'm on a headboat. I just with exactly what you said. I'm sending in an average. There's no way I'm measuring and weighing every.
Yeah, fish. I mean, so and
it's just number of fish.
Your subject, that catch is subject to being captured by EMRIC at dockside.
Right.
And they get plenty of programs.
Yeah, and they, well, they actually go fishing with us a lot in the summer. Yeah. Right.
So the question becomes the concept of how to deal with the zero catch trips. If you didn't really target them, does that count as a trip? I mean, the fish you're talking about here, and I would say that if you're doing striped bass, you don't say, did you target trophy striped bass? Did you target striped bass? And on the cobia, and on the same thing with the cobia, did you target cobia? If you accidentally catch a cobia while you're flounder fishing, yes, you're supposed to report it if you have a cobia permit because you kept it. But was that a targeted trip? No. The real key is if we can get 80% compliance on the number, on the permits and reporting together, then that gives us a number of fish caught, which gives the agency some leverage with MRIP to say, no, your numbers are wrong. And I think that's the most important thing we can do with these surveys. And with the trophy striped bass, it keeps us out of trouble with ASMFC, because we don't have to say, no, we're not catching 4,000 fish, we're catching 400 fish. And whether the size is there or not, I don't care, because it's either going to be way high or way low with those, and it's, I think, way low.
Maybe you make target optional, because like in Skipper's case, they might be heading off after sea bass and run across croakers, and that's what they're reporting what they catch.
With your
but
word.
That's for the charters, not the
that's recreational. For a commercial vessel, too. I mean, even right. If I got federal permit, I have to report when I'm on that vessel. If I catch nothing that I have a permit for, I still have to report it.
If you drive to the fuel dock and get fuel, you're supposed to report
I mean,
that.
And, correctly. You know, targeting stuff, I saw a lot of federal information stuff when we were doing tech reduction theme work. If you would see what some of the people said they were targeting compared to what they were actually targeting, as if it's a joke, I mean, you know.
Okay.
Because, you know, if I'm going to take a chance, I think I might catch a turtle today or something, so I'm going to say I'm spot fishing with 6-inch net. Right. I mean, you know, stuff like that happens, because, and as over rates down, what you told him you're targeting that day puts down spot. I mean, it would be a nice one.
Yes, please.
Well, I think, you know, I guess to try and bring some sense to it, the reason I'm assuming those are in place is because a dead fish is a dead fish. It doesn't mean if you were initially going out to catch it. And so that's where the idea comes from, that even if I am not a cobia fisherman, if I'm out flounder fishing and see something across the water and go catch it, from the standpoint of the stock, you know, the population's health, and from the stock assessment standpoint, it's important to know that that fish died, mm-hmm. At least when you scale it up to the whole, you know, level of the Chesapeake Bay or the Atlantic coast. And so we need to know, even if you weren't targeting, and then knowing whether or not you were targeting cobia is going to be important for that estimate of how many angler trips there were.
Right.
Well, I look at the whether you were targeting cobia or not gives you some metric for catch per unit effort.
Right.
Gives the agency a metric for catch per unit effort targeting cobia.
Although if it's mandatory, it gives us effort too.
Yes, it does, but it does. But then you get somewhat skewed by the people who weren't targeting cobia who happened to catch one, which I don't think is that many. You don't hear about that as often as the people.
Yes, that's what happened with South Carolina. You know, they saw in their their for hire fleet that had to do the reporting that these guys were going out, you know, just unable to catch cobia within state waters. Their numbers were just dropping so low in state waters, and the whole fleet had to go offshore to catch fish. And that was part of the contribution.
Okay. So what do you need along that line from us anymore?
Well, I mean, I think we've got some really good ideas, and I think we all have sharing some very similar thoughts on this.
And if it helps, some of the questions that are in that cobia survey are more general to the Saltwater Journal webpage. It says, what do you like about the format? What do you not like about the format? So come November, December, whenever we're ready, whenever we receive these surveys back and have a chance to summarize the information that we've gotten, we may be able to better say, at the very least, what cobia anglers desire. You know, they may say, oh my gosh, there are too many water bodies to pick from when I'm saying where I went fishing. I don't mind reporting it, but I can't find, you know, or it's too specific. I just want to be more general. So we may know, at least from a small portion of anglers, what their desire is, and it may help in terms of some of these more formatting changes. You know, there's some important stuff like what type of permit are we going to have? Are we going to require lengths and weights? Some of that's being covered by the survey, so we may get even more information on how other anglers feel about it. So we got until 2017 to institute these, and so if we want to wait until that last commission meeting, there's always the chance that we have slightly more information on the subject, but it may be cutting it close in terms of getting something in place and getting the word out.
Till when? 2017. Till when? January 1st?
Why don't you give us some homework and tell us where those surveys are that you're talking about, where you ask?
We're going to be sending them out.
Okay. Will you send them to us as well?
You can send them to us and ask us not to complete them.
Well, you know, it could certainly help with the conversation of what are we thinking about? Are you guys thinking about it?
I did bring in a
small group of anglers to look it over and see if it's got the right wording, if it's asking the right questions. So,
if you want our comment on it, then send it to us and we'll tell you which. But that's what you're after.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of bumping up the deadline of when we're trying to get it out so that we could have some responses back. So
Send it to us this week and give us a week to look at it.
In the reporting system. So if you're using the reporting system, then you'll get the survey anyway. If not, then
okay.
Not necessarily.
Well, for cobia.
Well, if you want
anyone with the cobia permit is going to get it.
Okay. Well, I don't have one yet, but when I grow up, I plan on fishing for them. So. Okay.
So body of water. Again, what is the purpose of this? And I think that body of water should be coastal water, outside 3 miles, and within the Chesapeake Bay.
State waters, federal waters.
Coastal waters, you know, from the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel out, right. Which isn't the real same definition, but that's an easy line. Or the line of demarcation out. And Chesapeake Bay, and or either state waters or federal waters. Just real simple. Again, the purpose of this is to deal with fishery management from a how are we doing things. If you go to MRIP, they ask you where they caught you caught the fish, and you know where they landed because of the survey data. If you go ask them for the A3 report, there's a report number, they call it.
So. About more than MRIP. I mean, they want to know where we're catching these cobia, so.
Why?
No, but Jeff, I mean, Tom's got a very good point. If that's the kind of thing that's going to hold up reporting and the inconsistencies in that are going to make it unuseful, then it doesn't necessarily have to be a requirement.
If I catch them, they'll be at Watchpeg Inlet. So wouldn't you want to know it was in the inlet of Watchpeg as opposed to the mouth of the Chesapeake?
So that's why I say the concept.
Added voluntary people that want to report that information, get us that information, and that's fantastic.
Put that as an option.
But if requiring that is what drops our reporting from 80% down to 50% or 40%, then
I can't see where that would.
Put them on there as options.
Yeah.
Figure out what you want to do, Matt, and then put other ones on there at options so that people that want to get more information can.
I can't see where that would slow it down. That generic, you know, what county, what city, that might.
How many options do you have right now for areas?
Online might be from, might have used, but
oh, yeah, it's dozens and dozins, I would say.
That's why I'm saying, okay, so you can make it, so Jeff, towards your end, what you're looking for, I think the coarseness that they would need for this, Lower Bay, Upper Bay, Eastern Shore, Seaside.
State coastal waters.
Chesapeake Bay.
Multiple choice. It's not one answer, one location. It's not fill in the blank.
You pick from a list of sites that are listed.
And it's a big list. It's got like Bluefish Rock. I mean, it's
It's multiple choice then.
But the issue is there are a lot of people who still don't think we should even be doing this in the first place. And so, it sounds silly, but the more questions you have, you do run the risk of turning people off from participating. And our goal is not to get people in trouble. Our goal is
if we're dealing with recall.
All right.
If we're not asking them for regularly.
We're running and gunning for 2 days.
Okay. Good enough. Anything else?
Pull up the list of questions you do on your cobia survey so we can make sure we caught everything.
No, I don't have it here.
We had a slide that showed one of these surveys that showed a lot of stuff you asked.
That was the report.
This is the regulations.
Right. Okay, so which one is this one for?
This is a tilefish grouper reporting, which is the state regulations.
I would not say date of harvest. I would just say trip number, city or county of landing, take it off. Water body fish, very limited. Gear type, take it off. Number of hours fished, no. Number of individuals on board. That one's tricky because you're talking about people where you say we did 10 trips and we didn't catch any fish.
All right, let's send in our personal opinions individually. We don't want everybody on the board here to go through their own opinions right now.
They basically copied the federal. That's what the federal has.
All right,
that's what we need for what we're looking for.
All right.
Yeah, I think
everybody here is going to have different opinions.
Yeah,
I think date is important. The time you had date of harvest, you said take it off. I think that's important to know what day.
And I think one of the biggest issues is that, like Joe said, these came all in response to some very specific issues. So there was never a point where the VMRC or anyone sat down and wrote out an official goal. What do we want this for? So, like you said, everyone's going to have their own opinion and eventually we should at least make the effort to figure out what do we want to get out of this before,
So on data harvest, Scott's saying that it's important. So I think that if I were doing this survey, I would say by wave the number of zero harvest trips, and on your 1, 2, 3, 4 for your harvest trips, include the date.
Because don't you want to know is that important to know what time of year people are fishing?
It goes back to the level of resolution you want. Like Tom said, if he just wants total catch, total effort biannual, then you wouldn't need it. But like I said, a lot of the stuff we put in the stock assessments is a heck of a lot more specific than that. And we can argue our data versus MRIP's data when we're at a commission meeting. But when the stock assessment committees meet, they would probably throw out something that doesn't have date, doesn't have, you know, number of angles. So things like that, you have to balance that trade-off of how easy do we want it to be and versus how many things do we want this data to apply to.
Right, so we need to give you our personal opinions, and then you need to weigh it against what you need when you get into your meetings with ASMFC and everybody.
Yeah,
else.
Or the South Atlantic, you know, the, right. the CDAR stock assessments, right. because that's what NOAA will act based on.
Right.
And obviously the situation we were in with COBIA this past year was precarious. You know, we got out all right, but I think it blindsided a lot of people, even the feds, to the point where they didn't really have time to act. So, but, you know, that's all beside the point of this discussion, which okay. is...
This discussion isn't to go through each line item and get seven different opinions on it.
I mean, the ultimate goal was, do we believe that they should be streamlined? Do we believe that this should right. be similar across these three fisheries? And you know, I don't know. I think it would take a long time. We wouldn't be able to do it tonight if we tried to get everyone's opinion on all of these different measures, just because there are a lot of options.
Unless the majority was to make it very simple. I mean, ultimately,
well, I think
it is to have a standardized, simple report. And I would like to, you know, I would hope that there would be a motion for a recommendation to do that.
I make that motion.
Okay.
I make a motion that whatever you do, it's standardized and very simple. A minimal amount of data so that we can understand the total catch, annual catch, and number of fish.
Okay, then discussion on the motion. What is standardized? Is there a standardized? Is it possible to make a standardized form that would fit all three fisheries?
That would allow.
That's going to require staff work to determine that in the beginning,
well,
is it not?
I don't know.
I don't think we have the capability at this table to sit here and answer that. They're going to have to go through
that's what I'm
requirements
asking.
For each of those three fisheries, what's required at the federal level, what's required in the individual state codes. And they're in my judgment, staff is going to have to make that determination.
I agree that staff's going to have to make the determination, but I think the goal is what I'm trying to set. Is the goal is not to get to understand the catch per unit effort. The goal is not to at least initially, it may be a successful trip, unsuccessful trip concept. The goal is not to understand the distribution of sizes. MRIP dockside intercept does a fine job of that. The goal is to say, is the data that MRIP is presenting by which we are managing this fishery good enough, and do we believe it? Because that's the bottom line what counts.
That's not the goal of this. The goal
for
is
these
to see,
three fisheries it is.
The goal is to say, is there one form, can we standardize this one form to all three fisheries? Doesn't have anything to do with MRIP.
But if
it doesn't have anything,
what's the motion on the table?
Can we standardize the form for all
to
three
use
fisheries?
A simple standardized form for all three fisheries.
And the question is, can we make one form standard that will fit all three fisheries? The answer is yes. Do we have a second to the motion?
Because we're tailoring all these goals. We don't have any requirements.
In general, you can do it, but some things are time sensitive, and doing it 3 months, 6 months, or whatever is 2 months. Like COBIA, if you actually want to have a handle on COBIA and make sure you don't exceed whatever number you feel like you should have, if you've reported semi-annually, you're not going to know.
So, Ernie, that is not what's on the form. That's the frequency at which they have to report.
So that could fall under a different mode. It wouldn't necessarily lock into
the same time period. He was discussing that part, too, when he was doing it.
No, and that's a really important one. We don't know what the answer is for COBIA because with striped bass, because there's a trophy season, it just says 5 days or whatever it is, how many every day? 15 days after the season is over. For tilefish, grouper, cobia, there may not be seasons. We may be open all year, so what is the requirement? You know, that's got to be figured out. You guys are certainly more than welcome to weigh in on that. And if we can get to a standardized version of that, we can say everyone's got to report every month, every 2 months, every, you know, 5 months if... can be done. So that, I mean, I think that's the first question we have is it even possible? And I think, yeah, it's possible.
Okay.
It may not meet everyone's goals and expectations of what this data can be used for. But as to John's question is, you know, talking to staff about the requirements and all this stuff, these were all made up just for us.
If they don't work, then none of it's helpful at all.
We really
got to get to what works. And what works is going to be a high percentage of compliance. Otherwise, no one's ever going to accept that this is representative of them.
Yes, please.
I'll second his motion.
All right, thank you.
I'm going to ask the same question. Can somebody read back the actual wording of the motion that's on the table? Because when I asked a minute ago, I got one version from Jeff and one version from you.
Okay, it's my motion, so I will state it, and you can, Joe can write it down. That all three forms should be the same and require the same information, and that they be simple.
So you're saying move to a simple, standardized reporting format for the three fishes?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if I'm going to unnecessarily complicate this, but would you want to specify that it should be for the calculation of total number of fish caught, or just leave that out for now?
Leave that out.
As far as the motion is concerned, that is out
for you.
Well, if you told us that's what you wanted, then we would go and figure out.
That certainly is my opinion, but that is not part of the motion.
That just complicates it, I think.
Right. So if we pass this, then y'all come up with the standard form, and then we can look at it and go, yay, right. Nay, we shouldn't add that.
And you can state when you present the standard form, this is the data and information and why we put these.
And what it can accomplish.
Right.
So we want the form to come back before us so we can decide.
Yeah, we could even do that by email, because, I mean, these were discussions that didn't happen. We were, you know, because COVID was so hot and heavy, it was at the commission meeting, the commission was ready to make mandatory reporting without any of these discussions happening.
So we have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor of the motion, say so by raising your right hand. It's unanimous, I believe.
Yeah.
All opposed? Abstentions? There you go. Anything else that you need on this topic? It brings up Spiny Dog. Oh, I'm sorry.
How are you going to make it mandatory? I mean, what are the consequences going to be if you don't report?
Consequences of making it mandatory.
No, making
it mandatory goes into rec. But.
No. If you don't report, what are the consequences for someone? No one's going to do this if there's not any consequences. If there's not severe consequences for not reporting, you're going to end up with 3% or 8% or whatever you have. So 8% is not going to do you any good.
Well, that's what we are.
So,
has been mandatory since
but it's mandatory.
Yeah.
So and you've settled for accepting 8%. So what's going to be changed to make this work?
The consequence we discussed earlier, I believe, was that you don't get your permit next year.
So you send out one warning letter or two warning letters that say, if you don't send us this data, here's a simple card to send it back on because we made it a simple form. Then you will not be issued a permit next year. And then that's the first consequence. And then the second time they do it, I doubt that the commission will take licenses away from people, but on this initially, but they will certainly do like they do any commercial waterman that's got a reporting problem and put them on probation and say, you do it again, you're going to lose your license.
Yeah, and there's going to be
in Virginia.
Two different levels of infraction. Not reporting when you have the permit is the first one. The punishment would be you aren't allowed to get the permit the next year. Fishing without the permit would be a different set of violations, and that would be
basically
some fine or whatever set out in the regulation.
A misdemeanor offense, $50 fine accordingly.
Yeah, whatever it might be.
I was going to say, can we mirror the commercial? You know, we've got mandatory reporting there. What do? We send out cards that say you're late. Is that an option? Is that simple?
Yes, because most of it, the vast majority of it is automated. We have email addresses, and so we know who has sent in something or nothing. So to that extent, we can. And another thing that we can consider as a group, since we're not done with this, we're going to look at the form and everything. We can send out, some of you guys have been around long enough, that matrix that we did of what should be the kind of, you know, egregious actions that you would be brought before the commission for. This group could make recommendations on when does somebody go beyond just not being able to get the permit? When should they be put on probation? When should the commission actually consider taking away their fishing privileges? You know, because they have the authority to do that.
Not a problem.
I feel like, you know, you can do pretty well the same thing you do with that. First time, you get a postcard. If you don't straighten it out,
how about sharing that
matrix? Third time, if you hadn't straightened it out, you get an MBO giving you a personal invitation to the commission meet to discuss it. I mean, you can do the exact same thing.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Okay.
Do the same thing.
You know, you gave them two opportunities, now you're giving them the third. You're going to have to come here and explain to everybody on the commission why they feel like they shouldn't have to do it.
One step, I forgot. Any comments from the audience on the topic before we move on? Seeing none, this brings up Spiny Dogfish. Unless you have anything else.
I'm almost afraid to bring it up, but I guess something that we, as cynical as it sounds, almost have to anticipate is what happens when there are 400 of these people who didn't report, and then let's say we get Marine Police Office pulls over so many other people. Is it something that we feel that we can actually handle between the commission meetings or between, you know, staff time for following through with these enforcements? And maybe that's a conversation we have to have with law enforcement, but...
You take about 10 permits, and everybody else is going to start.
Right. Yeah. The first year, you don't allow permits to get reissued. Word's going to get out, and you're going to start getting better, much better compliance.
Yeah.
The second thing is the commercial watermen don't get brought before the commission for a violation like this until they do it three times.
On what?
On not having a permit and catching something.
But you get a summons and you go to court.
You get a ticket. You get a ticket and you go to court and you go before a judge, and that's exactly what's going to happen to these guys, because
mandatory reporting, it doesn't make any, you don't get three times. You get three chances to get it straight.
And then you get brought before the commission and put on probation.
Maybe.
If you
they've
come
been
in and
tough here lately, this commission is not like the one I was on. I can tell you.
Yeah. But
they've cracked down. They have cracked down. All right, thank you very much. Believe.
Yes.
We beat this horse sufficiently dead.
Yes, we have.
Yes, we did.
My favorite, beating something to death, Spiny Dog.
I think we did. Do pretty well with Tom's motion of taking some time off on this. This is really just about the trip limits. I don't have any slides, but I can answer questions. And I do have some info for you. So the 2016-2017 season, the quota set at about 4.3 million, which is lower than what we've seen in the past. Last year, last year we were over 5 million, and our landings were about 4.1 million. So we've had very steady participation in this fishery, as all of you who have sat here know that we went through a lot to get rid of latent effort in this fishery. So we have 77 permit holders, about 40 or so active boats, with several of them having more than one permittee on board. So there is some room for increased harvest, but it's pretty steady. With that said, you know, one of the things we just have to consider is that quota cut, the fact that we would have been right about there last year. Now, we certainly want to do everything we can to make sure we utilize this quota. And so the consideration before us is to leave this fishery at a trip limit of 5,000 pounds for this season, or to possibly move up to 6,000 pounds. We can entertain other motions, but I think that's kind of the crux of what we're looking to discuss here tonight.
Okay. Scott has some comments.
Yes. Like Joe said, last year we landed 4.1 million. This year we're going to be right there. I think at this time it would be a mistake to change the trip limit to 6,000 pounds. If we do that, I think we're going to get more effort, and we'll end up closing early. And that is probably the worst thing that can happen to our fishery, is to close early, because it keeps steady fish off the market. In March and April, we're pretty much the only state producing. So the processors up north are going to go without. We usually start about Thanksgiving, so December and January are our heavy months. If we start producing a lot more fish, the last couple of years we've been able to inch the prices up. During that time, we still have Maryland producing, and Carolina comes on. So we've got a lot of competition to get these fish processed, and we've been able to push the prices up because we've been able to come up short and keep the fish on the fresh market. If we jam these fish on the market, we're going to go right back to the freezers. So
supply and demand.
I feel like we will utilize our quota. They're calling for a mild winter like last winter, and we're also looking at cuts for the 2017-18 season and 2018-19. I believe we go to 3.9 and then 3.8, somewhere in that area. Joe could tell you better. So we already know we're going to go down. I, instead of getting two dozen fishermen in here to talk to you all about this, I'll email you the list, Joe, of the names and the phone numbers of these fishermen who said that I can speak for them, but they would like to see it stay at 5,000. We would like a 5% tolerance to make it simple on the packing house, the boat, and law enforcement. Because if the federal government is saying we can have 6,000 in state waters, and as a state we decide to stay at 5, and Ernie comes in and he brings in his 25 barrels and he has 5,128, we weigh him in, we report the quota, he gets paid for it, we've got a little leeway there. It's simple on everybody. We would also like to see if we have a cold winter, if snow comes in and we're not able to fish in January and February, and it doesn't look like we're going to utilize this quota, as a buyer, we report weekly. We send a fax in every Monday of our weekly catch. Once we hit 80%, we phone in. So reporting is already in place. If we have not hit 80% by March 1st, then we would like to bump the quota to 6,000, or the trip limit to 6,000. That way we still have 2 months of fishing left to utilize our quota. During that time frame, North Carolina's finished. The fish are out of their waters. They have not got to Ocean City and New Jersey yet, so I think it's a good time for our boats to bump up, and we will not hurt the market. I think we can stand it then, and the demand is stronger during that time of year. So that's what these guys would like. And like I said, I've got two dozen names, and I ran out of time, but I haven't talked to everybody. But everybody that I spoke with is on board. I think it's a good way to manage this fishery. So,
okay. Any other comments from the committee?
I'll further his discussion a little bit. You know, like he said, we're right at that last year.
Yeah.
And if you remember when we first started back and it was 2 million pounds and we caught it in a mere matter of weeks.
Right.
I mean, you know, because people were participating. Now what I'd be afraid of, if you bump it up too high initially, you'll have people who's been oystering. That will say, hey, I can make more doing this than I can oystering, so I'll jump in it. So you're going to take the people who's been in it the whole time and close them down. And this way, with his suggestion, when oyster season is over in March, if we hadn't caught the quota, the people who were oystering will have the opportunity to do something also. So I think it's good on both ends. And, you know, like you said, you got to try to keep the market steady. When they first opened striped bass up, they were worthless because it was a rodeo. They caught in a week. A lot of them got wasted. A dollar a pound, some of them got thrown overboard. I mean, you know, because it took a while to get the market back. And that's what we need to really consider in this. You got to have a steady market because the processors can't be laying people off for a month and expect them to come back because, you know, if they can find another job, they'll find another job.
Right.
So if he's making a motion, I'm seconding it.
Anybody else on the committee? I have some gentlemen in the audience that want to speak or not. Yes, sir, please. Come up and give us your name and, for the record, tell us your opinion, please.
Tim Waddle.
Sure. Can you pull the speaker towards you, microphone? Joe,
Tim Waddle.
Okay.
On the Eastern Shore.
Yes, sir.
I was kind of looking towards the 6,000 to my area. I can't get enough to get a freight truck there or anything. I got a truck mine 35, 40 miles either way. If I had a little bit more, we could get a truck come pick up our dogs.
Okay.
Freight that's killing us. We had a guy in our area that was hauling them last year, but we couldn't get enough. He went to Hatteras and hauled them out of Hatteras all winter.
Are they doing 6,000 in Hatteras, do you know?
I a lot more than that.
They do 20,000 down there in state waters, but the boats down there only fish
up every night.
But they only fish once or twice a week. It's a nightmare for the packing house. It's more of a state water fishery down there, and they got to pick and choose who works and who doesn't work. And I think they pay 8 cents, 10 cents. So a lot of boats don't do it. It's too big of a they allow them too many. Tim, you can have your guy call me. He can stop right by my dock and pick up fish. We're looking for people to haul freight. You know, I talked with Daryl Wilson on the Eastern Shore. Daryl told me he was in favor of this plan. Chris Walker, John Shirtley about a Shinkatig. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of Eastern Shore people who are in favor of this, but I see where you're coming from. And
yeah, because I got a truck on 35, 40 mile in it either way.
Right, just have them call us. I mean, we can help with the trucking.
What do you think?
Sounds good, but.
So, I just.
When the truck's full over there, he's not stopping to pick mine up.
We can work on it. We really can. I think it's something reasonable we can work out.
I thank you. Appreciate it.
I just wanted to point out, so this is going to be a request for a public hearing this month. What would have been the typical fourth Tuesday of the month, October commission meeting, some of you may realize this already, has been moved to the first week of November. Actually, November 1st would be the traditional October meeting. That will be the public hearing to set the trip limit. So this will be up before the commission for a public hearing. We'll obviously pass on any FMAC motion. At this point, staff really doesn't have an opinion on the 5 or 6,000, but we certainly are mindful of hitting the quota again, which is something we haven't done in a long time. But I think both are manageable. To something else that Scott said that we've known about for a while, Scott's idea of a tolerance, we've discussed it with law enforcement. Colonel Lauderman and Lieutenant Colonel Rhodes feel like it is something that we can work with this time. You know, and I know Scott's been pushing it for a while, and I think we may finally be there.
Because we weigh him in anyhow. So.
Yeah. So I do want to say that we looked into that, and I think staff will be able to support that and get that in a reg. The reverse trigger type thing, whereas instead of, you know, a lot of quota triggers, if you hit 85%, you start to have restrictions. And this idea of if you don't hit, this is kind of newer for me, but if you don't hit it, we can go up. I can see how we can word it. I think, it's something we'll certainly consider, and I'll, you know, I'm certain I'll be talking to Scott between now and the time of the public hearing, but it's.
Okay. Yes, please.
I can make a motion for this to stay at the 5,000 to do the 5% tolerance. And to adjust the trigger in March to go up to 6,000 if we're not to 85%?
80%.
80% by March 1st. So I'd like to make that motion. And as far as the going to 6,000 and staying at 5, if we were that close to that number last year, it wouldn't make sense to go up to 6, catch the fish up, and shut down before the best time of year. Trucking, there's going to be a lot of issues with trucking this year. It is not, and 1,000 pounds one way or another is not going to make a bit of difference with trucking. I can tell you that. I own the trucks, so I know.
Okay. Do we have a yes, sir? Yeah, we still take comments from the audience. Just tell us who you are. And
yeah, I'm Mark Sanford, commercial fisherman. I'm for the 5,000 pounds right now, but as far as, like, the trigger goes, I'd like to see that in February. We can't fish that much in February. I mean, it's just like March, you know, so, I mean, why can't we change it to February? We get out 2 or 3 times a week maybe.
Okay.
Suggestion. And also, as far as, like, the quota you keep talking about, it's going to go down for sure next year.
It's already been set.
It's been set for the 2017, 2018
the
season?
Next 3 years are set, yes.
Okay. Now, the reason why they dropped it was because of a data problem. Is that correct? Now, they can come back, redo a survey, and it's possible that it can actually go up.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's correct.
They set 3 years in advance and then adjusted.
Okay. So we're already saying it's going to go down. It's not necessarily going to go down. What I'd like to see is basically, at this point, go to 5,000 like you're talking about, hit a trigger in February, maybe a compromise February 15th if that's good for y'all.
and then reevaluate this again next year when they do come out with the quota.
Certainly, that's
it. You know, because I mean, we don't know. It could change. It could change. And also, we have a rollover that you didn't acquire. I mean, we're going to acquire this year. That's a 5% rollover.
From last year?
From last year.
Okay.
So, you know, the 4.3 is actually going to be 4.5 maybe, something like that. You can get another 200,000.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not sure exactly.
So, I mean, we're going to have a rollover. So,
is it 3% or 5%?
I think it's 5% is what it is. You know, that's what I'd like to see.
Thanks. All right. Thank you. What would you think of moving it to February?
I think that's a fair compromise. We go with February 15th.
The maker of the motion have a problem with that? February 15th instead of March?
I think that's fine, yeah.
All right.
Moving that date, I got a question about moving that date. Do you need to move the percentage?
It still shouldn't matter. We've got mandatory reporting requirements now, which will trigger at 80%. We start to call in, so we've already got that in place. So I think 80% is an easy number to stick with.
And December is the big month.
And December is the big month, yes. Yeah, so we're December, January, and it does usually fall off in February, March, right with that. We don't get a lot of fishing days in February, typically. So I don't think it would hurt to do it the 15th of February.
Are you still asking for a 5% average for the 6,000?
That's in the motion. That was the other
question. Yes, a 5% tolerance. Not on the 6,000 because the 6,000 is the federal limit is 6,000. That's why with 5 we've got a little room to wiggle.
But you can have 6 plus in state board. You're not under federal guidelines in state board. That's like Carolina with 20,000 pounds.
If we chose as a state to go to 6 in state waters, yes. But that's not what we're asking for.
No, what I'm getting at is the tolerance. If you have a 5% tolerance, 2% tolerance, if you're fishing in state waters, it would be acceptable. You're not going against federal guidelines. You're following.
We only want 5%. We feel like any more than that, boats will target them. The whole goal is to keep it at 5,000. 5% gives you a 200.
That's my question.
I understand what you're saying.
February. I
don't know.
Talking when it bumps up to 6,000. Can they still keep a 5% allowance?
No, you can never keep any more than.
You can't keep anything more than 6,000.
If
could you have this 5% extra in state waters if you're at the 6,000 level?
If your boat holds a federal permit, then you have to abide by federal rule. If you don't have a federal permit in state waters, then you can do that. The Carolina boats that allow 20,000 do not hold federal permits. If your boat is federally permitted, you have to abide by federal rule.
And the other thing is, I don't know if we'd suddenly decided to do 20,000 pounds without running it by the
way. Oh, no, I don't want you to do 20,000 pounds. I'll use them as an example. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
It's a nightmare down there, trust me. The logistics of that is.
That's ridiculous.
Okay. Any more discussion on the issue?
I'll second it.
Well, I think the best. Sorry, just Robert's rules is that we already have a second or so with the idea of a friendly amendment, even if it's from the audience. As long as the seconder of the original motion is okay with the amendment, then you can go forward.
Yes, we are. I think everybody is. All right. All in favor, raise the right hand.
Can we clarify?
How about repeating it back so that we have a clear understanding of what it is.
Me, do you want to, or is it, I mean, so the
what you have written down is what counts.
Well, all right. So
write it down and read it back.
Okay.
So we retain the 5,000 pound per limit, 5,000 pounds per trip limit with a 5% variance. And if we're not at 80% by February 15th, the trip limit will be up to 6,000 pounds per trip.
With no
additional variance allowed.
Right, so the 5%, right, yep.
And if that's the motion, then fine.
It is.
Correct.
So February
15th. Everybody clear? All right, all in favor of the motion, raise your right hand. unanimous. Okay, anything else to come before the committee?
Just something real quick, and I won't make Jill get up for it. But there's another item on our commission agenda for streamlining reporting. And this is actually for striped bass and a long-requested item from Scott. As far back as 2005, when we were worried about the ITQ system for striped bass, we put in that in December, striped bass buyers would have to report daily. We no longer see any need to have buyers report daily. So we're going to be removing we're going to be having a public – we're doing a request for a public hearing this month, and again, at November 1st, we'll be looking to remove that requirement and a few of the other little line items in there that really just aren't necessary. So just wanted to bring that up.
Do we need to do anything to help that along, make a motion?
No, I think we fully understand, but just keep in mind that the public hearing will be November 1st, so certainly – if you want to get in written comments or show up for that, that would be the way to do it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Any new business from the audience? Yes, Mike, please. Identify yourself, please, for the record.
I'm Mike Avery. I'm a recreational angler and a charter captain and the president of the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association. Just a couple of items to address to the committee for things to consider for future FinFish committee meetings. First of all, on the subject of reporting, I'm totally neutral on reporting. The only thing that we oppose is dual reporting, particularly for recreational anglers to report the same fish to both state and federal agencies. You're going to be faced with that soon on blue line tilefish. In the current amendment that's working its way towards approval now with GARFO and the Mid-Atlantic Council and the Department of Commerce is mandatory reporting for recreational anglers for blue line tilefish. I have no idea how they're going to implement that and what mechanism they're going to do it, but it's in the amendment. And so what I would say is at the moment that when that does become a reality, that the recreational angler is required to report blue line tilefish to the federal government, that we no longer report blue line tilefish to the state government. Or the state and the feds get together and figure out who's reporting to who. I just don't want to see a recreational angler have to fill out two reports for the same fish. That is coming. It's in the amendment. I don't know how they're going to implement it. On the subject of blue line tilefish, there is in the amendment that is approved by the Mid-Atlantic Council, working its way for approval, is new tilefish limits. We're going to a 357 limit, 3 for a private boat, 5 for a charter boat, and 7 for a head boat. That's in the current amendment that's going to be approved, and that will be effective in 2017. Our blue line tile fishery will actually close on 1 January of 2017, not that far in the future, and it'll reopen again on 1 May. So this will have to we'll actually have to have new blue line tile regulations in the state for Virginia. And when this happens, when we do have new regulations for blue line tilefish, our recommendation is that we simply adopt the federal regulations, and we no longer even have state regulations, or the state regulations mirror that of the federal regulations, and that's 357. There is a little bit of monkey wrench in there that in the October meeting next month, many of the anglers, including me and anglers up and down the coast, complained loudly about this 357 sector separation thing. They're considering a framework amendment to adjust that at the October meeting. I don't know what's coming of that. I talked to Jason Didden just a couple days ago, and they're working on it. He really doesn't know where they're going with it. But there may be some tweaks to that. But in the current amendment that's approved, at least at the council level, is the 357. So we're going to have new regulations on blue line tilefish for Virginia, for the entire Mid-Atlantic coast. And so my recommendation is that this council or this committee consider just simply adopting the federal regulations for blue line tilefish. Now, what that means is then we'll have separate regulations for blue line tilefish and separate regulations for golden tilefish. Golden tilefish is 8 per person. So this is something that we'll have to consider, what our regulations for Virginia are for tilefish. But again, I don't support dual reporting. So that's on the subject of reporting. On cobia, you guys all saw the South Atlantic Council's decisions on cobia. Our recommendation to the committee and to the VMRC commissioners is that we adopt the South Atlantic Council's position on cobia, and we go to the one per person, six boat limit. And I say that so that we do not consider going less. You know, Virginia is historically known for going less than the federal regulations, and I'd like to see Virginia at least mirror that of the federal regulations, keep us at one per person a six boat limit. So I would just like to plant that seed that's we should not consider going lower than the federal limit on cobia. I would also like to consider that this committee consider that we do not support co-management with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. I think that's bad news for all of us cobia fishermen in the short term, at least until there's a new stock assessment done. The current ACL is unfairly low. When they did the zone split, giving Florida their own quota that's higher than the rest of the coastline. You guys all know this from the previous data. Having the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission co-manage cobia with the South Atlantic Council is kind of a lose-lose situation. You're taking a very small pie and you're trying to divide that up among the states. I just don't see any value added at this point in time until the new stock assessment comes out in 2019. I would be opposed to co-management of cobia with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. I don't see any value add in doing that. It'll just complicate things. But also, most likely, circumvent our ability to lobby the commission for state water regulations, because as you know, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission can regulate fisheries in state waters. And what they pass does become binding. I think that's all on cobia. A couple other issues, just real quick, if you bear with me. And I just say this just to get them out there. Things to consider for future meetings for the FinFish Committee. Striped bass is always on our mind. I think that we have continue to have unfair access to striped bass for the recreational angler in Virginia. Maryland fishes for striped bass pretty much year-round. April through December, they get to fish for striped bass all year-round. And Virginia only has a short spring season and a very short fall season. And our fall season doesn't even really get going until late November and December. I would like to have some sort of access to striped bass in the summer months, particularly those that river fish up in the Rappahannock and the James, where striped bass can be caught all summer. I think we ought to have our share of access to striped bass as compared to other states. I would like this committee to consider lobbying the commission and the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission on black sea bass. As you all know, that our black sea bass closes on 1 January. We don't have any access. Virginia is not the cause of the problem of black sea bass overfishing. We only catch 3% of the total quota. Not in Virginia, but the southern states catch 3% of the quota. 97% is caught from New York and on up. So by us giving Virginia and possibly Maryland an access to black sea bass in January, February, March timeframe, will not make a dent in the quota. So I would like to see us lobby to get access to black sea bass. I mean, we're getting to the point now, we don't have anything to fish for starting 1 January. Blue line tilefish closes 1 January. Black sea bass closes 1 January. We don't get any striped bass that come inside the line when our bay season closes on 31 December. So what do we have on 1 January? Nothing. I mean, tautog fishing and the waters get sometimes so cold we can't even catch them, at least not in state waters. We've got to go way out to an offshore wreck to catch a tautog. So that's something I'd like to consider. One last point, a little controversial. and I don't know how you guys would handle this in this committee, but Menhaden, always on the mind of the recreational angler. We oppose increasing the quota for Menhaden at the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. In August, they voted, there were several motions made to increase the quota. The motions didn't carry because it all ended in a tie vote. Our own state, Virginia, voted to increase the quota. I would like to at least see this committee take a position to not increase the quota for Menhaden. At least hold the line. That's really not even making progress. That's just holding the line to not increase the quota. Now, I know it's all political. Even the BMRC is probably told how to vote from our governor, and it becomes political at that point. But hopefully this committee is not political, and we can do the right thing and at least hold the line and not vote for an increase. Unfortunately, that's time sensitive. Next month they have to vote to set the 2017 quota. So if you were to make a motion, you'd have to do it tonight on that. I don't know if that's possible, but I'll at least throw it out there that we don't want to see any more Menhaden quota increases off the coast of Virginia, and that will be set next month. And we're concerned that there will be a lot of people making motions to increase the quota, and we're concerned that it may not end in a tie, it may actually get passed. So just wanted to get that out there and say that. I thank you for your time. Any questions?
Can I comment on the blue lines?
Yes, sir.
It looks like it's going to be, from what I'm hearing, that it's not going to go to 3-5-7. It looks like it's going to 5 across the board. And we are strongly pushing for them to follow the sea bass season. So rather than opening May 1st, hold off, open May 15th, and then close the same month, the middle of September, the middle of October, because a lot of the boats up north were pushing for it to close at the end of October, and we need it after that. So that'll help if it's closed. Because they've given us such a low quota, they've set us up to fail on that anyway.
Right, just like they did with Cobia.
So,
and that's okay.
It looks like it's going 5 across the board, not the 3-5-7.
And that'd be okay, too, but that still represents different regs
right,
for Virginia.
And we still have to, in March, you're shut down.
And we still have to come up with new regulations for Virginia, and what do we do about that? And so that's just a future committee action to start thinking about.
I'll make one comment. I was on the commission for 8 years. The governor's office never told me or J.T. Holland, which rode with me every day, how to vote on anything. They influence staff, because staff is part of the administration. Well, the commissioner is. He served at the pleasure of the governor. And, you know, they may make suggestions, but when the commission votes on what it feels like it should vote on. And if it, you know, if the increase is science-based, that's what you go by. You don't go by politics. And I honestly say, in 8 years' time, I was never approached by anybody from the governor's office.
Good enough. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Question for staff.
Sure.
On that point about joint management on Cobia, ASMFC taking on some of the South Atlantic responsibility, where is Virginia on that, in favor of or opposed to?
Well, I think, you know, that's the next step in this process is fleshing out a public information document with all the possible options.
Public information document from ASMFC, from
yeah.
South Atlantic, or something
from
out
ASMFC,
of the state of Virginia?
Right. So the management board for ASMFC's South Atlantic Management Board voted to create a public
South Atlantic
document.
Board went to Atlantic States and asked if they would be willing to participate. There was no vote taken at the ASMFC meeting. My question to you is Virginia in favor of joint management or against it? That's a simple question.
Okay, and I'm going to answer it the long way to cover everything.
Okay.
ASMFC's South Atlantic Management Board has asked to start a process, and that first step of the process will have all of the management options on whether co-management or joint management, you know, joint or complementary is the way forward. So, I mean, we need to see what the options will be. Our position is we have a different fishery than most of the coast. We pretty much are always hoping to have conservation equivalency. So whatever, wherever that exists within what's being developed as a management plan, we're going to support having conservation equivalency so that states can reach the same target by, you know, using the options that best suit them. So, but we aren't there yet in knowing, you know, and the board had, there's very little experience to draw from on joint plans and complementary plans. There's only a few. Certainly none of them fit the what's going on with cobia. You know, we can't look at spiny dogfish and say, oh, look what joint management has done for them. So there were a few people at the table that did want to look at that, and so they don't want joint management because it didn't work for spiny dogfish. And it may not work for cobia, but we need to see what the options are before we can say. But conservation equivalency, you know, at least in my mind, and I'm the voting member on the board, is one of the most important things we can, you know, keep in consideration here.
Anything else?
Jeff.
Sir.
On the Menhaden issue, now, I didn't serve on the commission, so I didn't have anybody. I know at this committee in the past, we have been directed by staff that on matters such as the coastal quota, we are forbidden to vote on it. What is the staff's position on that now? I think that came from over Jack's head when he told us that.
Yeah, I can't say that I remember that.
I think it was before you were
here. Yeah, I remember ever hearing that. So I don't know. I mean, if the committee was looking forward to, I mean, because you have to understand, with something like that, the vote wouldn't be going to the commission. Typically, your recommendations are going to the commission on a vote. These once ASMFC makes a vote at the management board level, that information would be weighed in Richmond on how legislation would have to change the quota. And of course, all of you as individuals or even as a group.
Yeah. So as a group, were we, for instance, to vote to say the quota should remain as it is, what would happen?
The legislature.
No, would it go? Would that information make it beyond this room tonight, other than the minutes from the meeting? Would it make it to ASMFC via the commission? Or not via, it would have to go via the commission.
Well, the vote,
yeah, it would.
The
yeah.
vote that's going to be taken is going to be by, I mean, we have three members that sit on that committee, right? You've got one representing the commercial side, which is Catherine Davenport, one representing the legislative piece, and I can't think of a good senator's name right now. And then the third person is either John Bull or Rob O'Reilly, and it's been O'Reilly recently. Between the three of them, they get one vote. So your question is, if we were to vote, would that influence?
Would that even be reported to the board before they make that vote? Because I'm confident that based on the people that are on the committee and understanding the politics in Virginia, the people representing us, as a majority of the three of them, would say increase the quota.
I would agree with that.
So
since they voted that
if
way,
we vote yes, so I don't have to put people on a spot, because I'm willing to make a motion, but for ecological reasons, because I also sit on the NOAA Chesapeake Bay Ecosystem Management Goal Implementation Team. Before
please come
in. Make the motion.
No, I'm asking.
I don't know, Tom. I was never giving marching orders. If Jack said that to this committee, you know, I don't remember
that was,
ever
that was
it.
Before the commission had any authority. At
yeah,
all.
And so I right. So I basically, and it might have even been tongue.
All right, all right.
If it's like, controlled by the legislature and not controlled by VMRC, it's completely out of our jurisdiction.
we have nothing to do with that.
If we, even if we wanted to express an opinion, I don't think any of us here has enough background information to know what we're talking about. So I don't think we should vote on it.
With all due respect, Mr. Chairman, I disagree with that.
Well, you may, but I don't think all of us do. I don't know what this annual catch is. I don't know where it's caught. I don't know what the bycatch is. I don't know anything about enough to say that, to answer that intelligently. And you can take that any way you like. Yes, please.
I can make a motion to adjourn.
Second. Do I have a second? All in favor? May it's adjourned. Thank you.